Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Are you ready? Let's get ready to ramp up your sails. And now the man you've been waiting for. He is the real thriller in Manila. The undisputed, undefeated, reigning, defending, pound for pound, heavyweight, John, the sales machine, Rankin!
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is a LinkedIn top voice and is the industry leading CEO on modern sales and revenue trends. As the CEO of Scaled Consulting, he helps VPs of sales and business leaders break down the complexities of scaling quickly to increase sales and gives them peace of mind through his modern sales framework. He has worked with thousands of top revenue leaders and teams globally, such as Microsoft, Splunk, the NFL, and the NBA, to modernize their sales organizations, driving hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. His insights have been featured in Forbes, Huffington Post. He's been on Gary Vee Audio Experience and more. He is the author of the book, The Innovative Seller. Please welcome Jake Dunlap.
There we go, man. I need you as my hype man. I like that. I'm getting pumped up.
Hey, man. We call it prime time in my world. So prime time is in the morning when we pump up the sales guys to go out and do battle. And then we have prime time evening to celebrate their wins.
I like that.
That's full on driving a full-time direct sales force. And currently I'm involved with doing it with 3,000 people.
You better be pumped up, man. You better be.
Yeah. And they better be pumped up. I love what you do and I love how you're doing it.
I appreciate that.
So, yeah, and G2 rated you higher than McKinsey as far as being effective at, you know, driving sales and RevOps. So, but first of all, Jake, let's keep it real. What's the first thing you ever sold?
You know, it's interesting, man. I'm trying to think that I wasn't really like the hustler kid. I don't think I was, at least. When I went to college, I had to work full time, you know, so my first job in college was telemarketing. And so I had to sell vacation packages to get you to a timeshare pitch. So what I would do is I would call you up, at night and, you know, I would say, hey, great, you know, I can probably remember some of the script, but I had to get your credit card for like $35 to get you to historic Williamsburg for a 2-night, 3-day vacation. And all you had to do, it's so simple. It's like 1 hour of your time to just, you know, have a conversation, see if it's a fit. It's no pressure. And, you know, I'll throw in a couple extra like dinner gift certificates for you. So the very first thing that I like sold was getting people to timeshare pitches. And I had to get their credit card over the phone and convince them to go to, I sold a bunch, Tunica, Mississippi, Williamsburg, maybe Durango, Colorado too. I can't remember. But yeah, that's the first thing I sold.
Based on your perspective, I mean, you've been doing this a long time. What do you think the biggest turnoff when you're dealing with salespeople?
I think there's a few. And they're related. You know, one is they're not an expert in my space, meaning especially now with, you know, Google and ChatGPT, you know, hey, what are trends of a CEO of a sales consulting company in 2024? What was top of mind for a CEO of a, you know, small to medium sales consulting company? You know, like the amount of research it takes to like be mediocre at this is like almost nothing. So I think it's a lack of preparation. And really giving a shit about the people that you sell to is one. And then two is not actively listening. And there's kind of three different layers of listening, kind of listening to talk. You know, there's the kind of the next layer, which is like, I'm hearing what you're saying. And then there's global listening, which is kind of taking everything into account. Because salespeople can be adverse to things like scripts, et cetera, they're always thinking of the next thing to say, and they're not actually listening. And so I think it's a combination of not being prepared and really understanding your buyer and caring about what's important to them, and then listening and making sure that whenever you make a recommendation, it's tailored to what I told you and not the exact same thing that you told the last person.
In the old days, there used to be a phrase called, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. People check you out with the social media, with your website, with your LinkedIn profile, even before they get on the call. So I always say, you know, 25% of the sales made before you even talk to the individual. You need to get to know them.
Yeah.
You got to do your research, you know. Professionals prepare. Amateurs, they get on a call and they try to wing it. And what you're saying, people don't listen, right? They need to hear what is the prospect's biggest needs and challenges and problems.
Yep.
Yeah, I totally resonate with what you're saying. You've been running a scaled consulting now for 11 years, right? And driving hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. Hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. That's no joke, man.
It's been a journey, man. It's been a journey. You know, scaling a people business in particular is not the easiest. You know this. You scale the people business too. It's been a journey. And I think the key is I love sales. I love where sales is going. I love the art and the science and the process behind sales. I love sales technology. Because of that, it keeps me motivated to, you know, keep staying on the forefront of what's going on, what's happening, and, you know, bringing that to, you know, the companies that we work with and, you know, social media and other channels.
Throughout your journey, I mean, you've worked at a ton of great companies. What was the catalyst for you to finally decide, you know what, I got this. I'm going to start scaled consulting and do it a different way.
Yeah, for me, you know, I was never one of those people who thought they would be an entrepreneur, meaning like I didn't have this like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to start my own company. That wasn't like my thought. Until I started my company, I never thought I would start a company, right? If that's a non-traditional, we'll call it like entrepreneurship path. It was reality. You know, I was, you know, as a VP of sales at Glassdoor, scaled that from $0 to $1 million in monthly recurring revenue in about a year. Scaled this team from 0 to 40 people in a year, and well, had a ton of success. And then, there's just a game that's played where it's like, okay, now we need the next person who's scaled to 50 million, and then we so I saw that, and then went to another company in, you know, in the kind of the rapid growth tech world, and I'm like, the same thing, went from like 1 to 4 million in the first year. I realized like I'm extremely good at building and scaling sales organizations, motivating teams, getting people to hit numbers. I sucked at politics. Like I was bad. I was not good at, you know, how to interact better with some of my peers. And but I also saw the writing on the wall that if you're going to go be a VP of sales in, you know, tech in particular, you're going to have a year run, then maybe a 2.5 year run. Now, then something's really going to flame out and you'll have another year run. Then you'll have a 4 year run. And I'm like, is this my life? I'm just going to go work for these people. I make good money. Don't get me wrong. Make great money, but like that really just is not excite me as a purpose. And what I saw is that sales teams look at marketing. Marketing's got a PR agency, a web design agency, a performance marketing agency, you know, you name it, there's a specialist. Sales has none of that. Sales has always had this mantra of like, we got to hire full time. And even if these people aren't experts at the technology you're using or the building sales playbooks, they're like, you know, we try to hire full time and it's just silly. You know, you need to hire people that are experts at specific needs that you have. And so your team's not distracted and they can do other things. So, you know, long story short, you know, that was really it. It was reality. It was like, here's where I'm at. Here's the skill set that I possess. Why am I doing this for other people? Let's go and try it. Let's go for it. You know, I got my first customers cold outbound. I reached out to people. I saw who raised money. I said, hey, here's what I've done. Let's set up some time. Close deals. It was really kind of no looking back, you know, from there.
You mentioned Glassdoor. So And you mentioned that you took it from zero. Was it from zero to a million reoccurring revenue?
We were at like 300,000 in annual revenue when I started. So as when I started, we were at 300,000. And I think we had done 300,000 period ever, like the history of the company. And then they exited, and, you know, what was that? It's probably 6 years. I guess it would have been, 6 years later. Was it 6 years? Yeah, 6 years later for 1.2 billion.
So let's talk about that. You jumped in. They did 300 grand, right? And how did you take it from that 300 grand? Let's talk about the methodology you used. And I'm not asking you to give away all the secret sauce.
I give it all away. I give it here. My philosophy is this: I will give you everything, but you still got to out execute me, and we'll see how well that goes. So I give it all away for free, because I know 99% of people, will not do anything with it. But I look forward to the people that do.
Right on. We're going to rock and roll, because, I love people that say, I read 1,000 books. Yeah, show me what you implemented.
That's the key. I say that all the time. It's like, I read a ton. I'm a voracious reader. And especially early in my career, the old school, the Brian Tracy's, the Zig Ziglar's, I was listening to CDs on tape, all that stuff. So I was very voracious, but I put it into action. So I'll tell you, man, I'll tell you why I was successful, and how I was able to scale revenue so quickly and, repeat that now, hundreds of times for companies. I think there's a couple different things as I, in retrospect, and, we've been able to implement that now, some of the stuff now in our consulting, right? Number one is obsession. Again, it goes back to what I said is annoying about salespeople, is obsession about the customer. And the very first question when any rep comes up to me or my teams or my leaders, et cetera, and they say, hey, this account, blah, blah, blah. The very first question that my leaders ask and I ask, how does the company make money? If you don't know how the company makes money, how can you help them? You have to be able to, if you don't understand their industry, whatever it is, and even just at a high level, you're not going to be able to put together a plan or a proposal that's actually going to help them to solve problems. It's not going to happen. And so how does the company make money? And if you align your sales organization to where everyone in your sales team is focused on understanding what the companies that you work for do, what the roles that your people have, we drilled personas. Okay, HR, talent acquisition at this company. Okay, what do they care about? What's top of mind? Because, look, at any product, sales teams get so myopic. They think that what they sell is the most important thing in this person's life. And, if you're selling to a CHRO of a publicly traded company, they have employee relations, they've got legal, they've got benefits, they've got compensation. What we did was a portion of that. And so what that allowed my team to do is they appreciated, again, what is this persona going through? So from that, then my people can have business conversations. If you drill your teams on the industries that you serve and the people and what they do in those industries, then your team can have a consultative business conversation. So that's number one. Number two is I have I don't know if it's unique. I think it's relatively unique. And I'll give, there's a third one I'll talk about too, is I was able to quickly align on the real value prop of what we did. Meaning before, when it was founder-led sales and marketing was leading sales, it's like, oh, you want to come and participate. We're a review, we have reviews about your company, come and participate. It's going to be helpful. You want to be a part of the conversation. And guess what I can't prove ROI on is participating in the conversation. Guess what I also figured out early? People's budget for employer branding is not much. Now their budget for talent acquisition is large. And so we were able to say and completely change the pitch. And that's just from knowing what our customers cared about and saying, look, you are looking for these types of job seekers, these passive job seekers that aren't in the market. When someone is researching your company, they might type in, what's it like to work at Oracle? What is the salaries at Oracle? What's the environment like at Oracle, right? That's what top candidates do. And guess what the number one search result is for every single one of those searches for your company? It's us. And guess what? The people visiting your profile right now, 25% of them are, you know, I'm just making it up, software engineers. Are you trying to hire software engineers? Let's set up a conversation. And so we were able to cut to the heart of what was important and what had budget and align our value prop to that. And third is sales is a process. You know, when I was prior to that, I was at a company called Career Builder for almost 4 years. And I learned, I was so lucky, they put me through like, Jake, this is what a repeatable sales process looks like. And so I was able to quickly instill what made us successful at Career Builder into the organization. So my teams knew how to talk to people and they knew what they were talking about. They had a value prop that we knew we could tie to return on investment and solve real change. And we had a repeatable process. And so those are the three things that I think, you know, can make any company successful. That customer obsession, that really unique value prop and how you differentiate against the competition and prove ROI, and then a repeatable process to scale it. And that's the sauce.
A lot of people ask me how to recruit and train and retain great people. And I said, well, you know, it all starts even before you recruit them, right? You've got to be the nectar. You got to show them in the public eye, what do you offer the best talent? So like all of our website, you'll see, you know, rewards, recognition, competition. You'll see, you know, annual trips. You'll see what's in it for them even before they join you. Because if they don't see it, you're never going to have an opportunity to get that top talent. So I love what you're doing. Customer obsession, value proposition. I talk to a lot of CEOs. And I actually was coaching and doing a lot of CEO coaching around the world, helping CEOs grow their business. And the first question I ask, and I do my research, is what is your value proposition? Because ultimately, that's going to be how you are unlike everybody else. So you do this for companies all over the world. What is the biggest challenge you've had implementing this process? And then how did it turn out?
Oh, God, biggest challenge. I mean, where do we start? Just depends on the year, you know, or the month or the quarter. When it comes to scaling a business. Look, I think there's a few things. If you look at, there's different personality types and types of leaders. I love the tactics, but I'm also what you'd probably consider a visionary. If you put a meaning, I love what's next. And I think it's my job as a CEO to stay on top of what's next. So I make sure our firm is prepared to meet customers when that time happens. I think sometimes I'm too far ahead, you know, and ChatGPT is a really good example of that, where it is so obvious to me. It's not even obvious to me. It's proven just the amount of impact that it can have on revenue organizations, but still how hesitant sales leaders are to truly implement this across their revenue organization and have standardized best practices around how to leverage it. It's just an example of like the next up thing of what I'm probably ahead, what I am ahead of the curve on. So I think that's it, is how do you temper, I think this is a constant battle for some CEOs, is how do you temper, you know, kind of moving your company to where you think the ball is going with continuing to double down on what's working today. And it's so hard in the moment to know what the right thing is. And I think there's been times where I've made the mistake of kind of maybe moving us a little too soon into what's next and new, and should have maybe just stayed the course. That's probably what sticks out to me. And I'm sure there's a million other things I've done that, you know, I wish I did differently.
You're actually embracing the change. And I always talk about there's two types of companies, and that's the quick and the dead, right? And if you're not innovating eventually and growing, you're going to die. My psychology about it is, you know, doing what we're doing right now is extremely important, but, you know, building, we need to at the same time be spending at least, you know, 20% of our time building what's coming in the future, because otherwise you're just going to get left behind.
Well, that, I mean, John, like I've got a framework and I don't really know where, I don't know. I don't think I stole this. This could be a Jake original. I mean, there's no such real, I mean, it's probably borrowed, parts of it. And I call it 80-15-5. It's actually in the book, and I talk about this when it comes to how do you build in time to stay on top of technology trends, because that's an important part of being a modern sales leader. And 80-15-5 means when I look at my calendar every week, I say, or 80% of the activities that I'm doing this week focus on things that are going to move the needle for my business in the next 3 months, you know, and usually I try to say like next month or 1 to 3 months. And then I look at my calendar and I say, okay, are 15% of my time dedicated to things that are going to move the needle for my business in the next like 3 to 9 months? And then it's 5% of my time should be focused, cuts, and that's just a few hours every week, to the things that are going to have an impact on my business in a year or longer. And I think that's an issue for a lot of people that, and it, by the way, you don't have to be a CEO. You can be a sales rep. You can be a sales manager. You can be a director. You can be a VP, and you can take this philosophy and run with it. If you are not making time to do things to help future self and future proof, you're always going to stay on the hamster wheel. If you're not fixing, spending a little bit of time, you know, now to fix that thing that's been a thorn in your side, you cannot get off the hamster wheel. And I always do that. You know, the other analogy is like, you know, if you ever leave a glass of water for yourself after a long night of drinking, right? And I always call that, you're looking out for, I'm looking out for future Jake. And if you're not doing things to look out for future you on a consistent basis, you can't get off the wheel. You're going to always be doing the things that are going to impact now, and you're not going to be able to fix those things that could be fixed. And so you're going to encounter those same problems in 3 months, but you should have fixed them. And you're going to encounter the same problem in 9 months, but you should have fixed them. And so it's just a really important concept that, you know, you are dedicating time every week to those things. Like a good example, I have on my calendar, it's every Thursday morning, 8 a.m. It says 6 month goals. And every single week, and it's January, I pull it up and I look at my goals and I make a note, how am I doing? Because if you don't look at those consistently, I don't know how to adjust my week or next week. And, you know, that's just like one example of some of the things that I do. But, you know, you really have to build in time. You can't just be busy, busy, busy on the now, or you stay on the wheel.
Yeah, you fall asleep at the wheel. And, you know.
Yeah, you fall. Yeah, that's exactly it. You fall asleep executing over and over and over and over again. And then you look up and you're like, God, what did I do? Yeah, I answered a bunch of emails, but did I move the needle on anything? You know, and answering emails and being in meetings is not doing work.
A lot of times we get so caught up, or I hired people to handle revenue operations when I've always driven the organization. I'm constantly pivoting, not just to what's next, but how to evolve my organization,
yep.
Whether it's a sales methodology, whether it's new value proposition, products and services, so that I can add more value to whoever it is that we're working with. And I actually got seduced into a situation where, because I was never in software, I mean, I've done skincare, I've done car care, I've did advertising, promotions, and literally built outside sales teams for companies, whatever product or industry they're in, even in farm supplements, believe it or not. I mean, multi-billion dollar industry, right? These supplements for farm animals to produce more value in the marketplace, yeah. Right? Sometimes caught myself making a mistake and have to recheck. Liz Elting, you know, she built translation.com, the company Translation, billion dollar company. And she was on, and she was talking about, you know, she's made mistakes too. So if, in the RevOps world, I mean, you work with some of the biggest companies in the world. I mean, and you know, the NFL and NBA.
And growing. Right. Yeah. And lots of growing companies too.
Yeah. And so to that, what do you see in the revenue operations world with executives and stuff like that? Because I mean, they're not the owners, right? They're in a position to create growth, but what do you see the biggest challenges with companies finding great people that actually can do what you do or what like scaled consulting can do?
Well, you know, I think a part of it, and looking as a former sales leader, I mean, I still have a lot of that DNA. to build and scale a business, it actually requires a lot of the non-sexy things. Closing deals is great, man. It's exciting. Upselling, growing customers, for personality types like yours and mine, that's exciting. The reality is a lot of times it's the boring stuff that actually allows you to scale faster. And, for a lot of companies, if we'll come into a company could be doing 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, whatever. And they don't know how they got there. The lead sources, they don't know how the data is a nightmare. And so there comes a point where if you want to scale, you need to be able to know what got you there. And it could be like, look, that was the previous market conditions. Now we need to adapt to new market conditions. But I'll tell you, at least from my experience, that with a lot of these companies, if you don't lay the foundation, a lot of it's like, hey, we're flying this revenue plane and we're putting duct tape as it's flying. If you don't have a time where you bring in somebody, whether it's a full-time resource, someone to help you to build real infrastructure, and I don't mean, and not overbuild, right? I see people who spend $500,000 on a Salesforce implementation. It's a waste of time. But build for appropriate, for where you're at today and the next like 1 to 2 phases of scaling. Do you know what got you there? If I look at your sales team of 10 people, 20 people, 30 people, what's their average sales cycle by stage? And why is Johnny doing such a good job at getting people faster through the process? And how do we then replicate him across our sales organization? And so I feel like with a lot of companies, there's not an appreciation for the importance of data and insights. That if I have data, let's talk about outbound sales. If I can't track what's working, what's not working, how can I replicate that across my team? And so it's interesting. I went to Missouri State University at the time I graduated. It was called Southwest Missouri State. There's 20,000 undergrads, so it wasn't like super small. Didn't love math as much, but for some reason I was good at stats. I don't really know why. And just like a quick little history lesson on me. My first job was in Major League Baseball with the Tampa Bay Rays. And after the first season, that we had a phone loop that was this inbound phone loop. And what would happen is if you made a call, it would skip to the next person. And so after the first season, I did a scatter plot analysis of when every single inbound call that led to a deal happened. And I found these gaps. It was like 11 to 11:30, 1 to 1:30, like 2 to 3:30. Like there were like 4 gaps to the day. I was already like me and this other guy were number one or number two every month. So I was already a top, one of the top reps in the company or at the team. And I just was like, all right, this is when I'm doing my cold calls is during these blocks. And so here's what happened. Day one, everyone else starts their dials. I'm like, Tampa Bay Rays, this is Jake. Tampa Bay Rays, I'm getting all the inbound. Day one, day two, day three. People get wise to, like other people get wise to what I'm doing. I didn't need a boss to come and tell me to look at my performance data. I ran my performance data so I could close more deals and get better. And the crazy part about this that just shows how anti-data so many sales teams are, at about day three, I said, guys, let me show you what I'm doing. I swear to you, I showed them the scatter plot. I showed them you should not be making calls at these other times. All of you should be making calls during these times so all of you can get more leads. Not a single one of them did it. They had the data. I showed them what was happening, and they still put their head down and grinded it out. And so for me, it all starts with data. I try to find the clever ways out, if you can't tell. And I'm already very good at what I do, and I'm a student of the game, and I'm a sales professional. And when you double that down with being clever and knowing your data, knowing your performance and what's working, then that's how you supercharge results. Whether you're an individual or you're an organization that's looking to really scale.
I love it. Yeah, I had Jeffrey Gittemer on here.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I've had him on my show before. He's another one of those guys I was devouring. Little Red Book, Little Red Book of Sales. I've read that back, 2005, maybe.
I have the sales Bible when it,
yeah,
literally I bought it and it's got the floppy disk and the cards. Right. And I was showing him because he was on my podcast. I was on his. And
That's funny.
where did you get that? And I'm like, oh yeah, this is a treasure. He goes, that's going to be worth money. I said, I know, and I'm going to sell it. And he goes, well, wait till I'm dead. Anyway, he's a great guy.
You're like, yeah, make me an offer, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's what I find. A lot of people get, you know, stuck organizations with scripting, and they don't think outside the box. They don't cross-pollinate value in different industries that they can implement, or strategies in other industries that they can implement in their own. And, you know, like you said, you mentioned some of your methodology. You don't know if you just came up with it or you learned it along the way. But, you know, Steve Jobs was great at that. I mean, like, he stole a lot of great ideas from the mouse to Bang & Olufsen's, you know, the wheel. Like, he went outside his box, right, to look for other strategies and what's coming. He was so innovative. And Apple is, you know, obviously the best of the best at this, just fact.
Yeah.
And always embracing the next thing, and yet not getting caught up in what's just the best technology right now without it having the functionality. So they really do target the needs of consumers really well. That's why they're one of the first $1 trillion companies. And here we have ChatGPT, and there's a ton of others, right? And I've embraced it.
Yep.
We're building into the sales machine. The sales machine literally automates the sales process, but still empowers the salesperson.
Yeah, for sure.
With the psychology and methodology that drives sales behavior, that keeps them going. It raises the waterline of the entire sales force, not just the stars, like you said.
Yeah.
And Jack Daly says this better than anybody. There, you know, he goes into companies, there's 2,000 people, and I met Jack. Jack's a legend. And he goes, but there's not 2,000 different ways to sell something. You can replicate and duplicate.
And it's, again, I've never understood it. Meaning, like I heard, you know, I remember back to, you know, my first days and like sell, and even again, go back to the telemarketing story. Man, I'd hear somebody say something over here. I'm like, stealing that there. Like, my job is to get it right and to close more deals, not to do it my way. And, you know, again, I'll tell another story about this and kind of how it impacted my life and the light bulb. I was 26. I remember it like it was yesterday. I go to Career Builder. I mentioned them earlier. I had a lot of success in sports, wanted to change the scenery, went in, you know, kind of thought about tech. And, you know, I go through the training class. And, you know, there's like seven of us, maybe eight of us. And I'm the last or second to last person. I haven't sold anything. And I'm like, what is happening? I'm God's gift to sales. Like, why can't I sell? And my director, so my boss's boss, he listened to my call and he goes, Jake, why aren't you following the script and the process? And I'm, you know, I'm laughing. I'm like, come on. I mean, Evan, I'm not. You know, look, I get that. He goes, Jake, let me ask you this question. He goes, do you think we train 1,000 salespeople on this process because we're stupid? Do you think we train them on a process that does not work? And I sat there, you know, 26-year-old Jake, you know, his ego wanted to say no. I'm like, well, probably not. That doesn't make, yeah, you wouldn't do that. He goes, exactly. He goes, so look, man, drink the Kool-Aid, run the process. And I said, all right, you know, what did I have to lose? And, you know, was it a little bumpy? Were some of the questions not my normal order of operations? But over the first that month, I'm like, I see now why the order of operations of the questions matter. If I get too tactical too early, I get bogged down. Okay, I see how if I position it. And the next month, I closed $60,000 in new business. 2 months later, I got promoted to leadership. I'd been there for 5 months over someone who'd been there for 2.5 years. And that was my epiphany of just sales is a repeatable process. What separates me from a B-plus player is I also am a student of the techniques of sales and, you know, using speech and different things to make it easier for people to consume information and how to do storytelling. But if you follow a process, you can be pretty good. And so that's my... You know, that's my my journey on the importance of a sales process. Let's put it that way.
The mindset, the skill set, you know, followed by a heart set. When you really do come from service, there's no nervous. You literally are there to help people. Like, that's why I really love sales.
That's a good call out. Yeah.
I was a different kind of kid though. I used to go with my Aunt Opal when I was a young boy, and I was a paper boy, and I was mowing lawns. I was doing everything to make money. But I would go to the, you know, we called it the old folks home, right? Now, politically correct, it's senior living. But I would go with her because she was like 75, and she would go and visit her friends, and, you know, she just wanted me to tag along. But anything I could do to help them people was just...
Yeah, sure.
Was just, you know, magical, like the smiles you could bring about on their faces because nobody had visited them. And I just love to serve people. I think, I know it's the greatest superpower you could ever have in sales. But if you don't have the methodology, if you don't have the skill set or that mindset yet, you got to sharpen your sword, right? You got to get better. And I love sports. Like, I'm a huge fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, we didn't do very good this year.
I wish you guys could have taken out the Ravens for us.
Yeah, exactly. We did take out the Ravens twice this season, funny enough, but, you know, they didn't
have
any starters.
Yeah, I wish you could have got it done. I'm a Chiefs fan, so we got a big game coming up here.
Right on. Patrick Mahomes is, man, come on.
It's been a good run.
Come on, Patrick Mahomes. I give it to you guys because Chiefs went through a drought for a long time.
That's what nobody realizes. You know, like, people like to give us, like, now it's like, I feel like it's like people hate us, like, just because we keep winning. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you don't know. Like, we're not a big market team. We're Kansas City. We're not Boston. We're not the Patriots. You know, we're Kansas City. You know, like,
well, you figured out a way to pay Patrick Mahomes, and that was the greatest thing that the Chiefs ever did.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, he's a stud, dude.
Exactly.
You know, he's the most innovative quarterback of all time.
I love him.
No one can compete. I mean, Tom Brady, you got to give it up. You got to give it up. But
yeah, he's got that. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see. Mahomes has got a lot of years left, so we'll see how far he gets.
Yeah, probably 100 years. Mahomes is such a stud. So I cross-pollinate things, like, especially in my sales team. Regardless if I'm dealing with the revenue operations, a VP of sales, director of sales, my attitude is the standard is the standard. And if you're listening to your people, then they're setting the standard, right? Because you should be listening to the customers. And I'm not going to drop my standards to go down and work at your standard. You're going to have to come up to our standard, and these have to be world-class standards. What kind of resistance do you get, or has your team gotten when you went into a company to turn things around or scale them?
I mean, it can come from anywhere. You know, IT is always a fun one. I was just we had a call with a client, and the IT is, you know, integrations and this, and you're like, look, I get it. It's not, you know, but here's the business impact. So can we get off this? The number one is usually sales team scars. And then, you know, if they've got a big field-led organization, it's, you know, teaching an old dog new tricks and making sure that, you know, everything that we put in place, people feel like is theirs, that they've been heard. I think what we do to try to avoid these, because we've ran into the buzzsaw. This is a good story. 2017, I remember this shit like it was yesterday. We landed a huge contract with Microsoft, right? And this is, you know, this is big for us, right? Like, we got a global deal with Microsoft. I'm like, you know, I don't know what we did to get that thing, but we did it. And so they had never done, when they roll out new products at Microsoft, you know, it's typically just a product training. So they bring in their top partners in London, Seattle, you know, Singapore, wherever in the world, and they just teach them about the products, etc. Well, this product it was like a software offering in their IoT space, and it used to be a platform offering, and, you know, it might be a little competitive. So they wanted to have kind of a go-to-market training for the partners too. So, hey, here's how you position SaaS, you know, versus what you might be selling, and blah, 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 blah. We didn't get a chance to talk to too many of the customers before we did it. And this is, you know, this is what we learned, you know, what I've learned now in consulting is, like, before you have to loop in the stakeholders ahead of time a lot, so they feel like they're a part of the content creation, et cetera. So when we do change managed exercise now, you know, we make sure key members of the sales people, the squeaky wheels, the other folks, they're involved in the input team. And so as we deploy things, they're like, oh, I put my thumbprint on that. Yeah, that's mine. We did not do that with Microsoft. And I'll never forget at the lunch break, me and Matt who had been with me for 10 years at the time, you know, now, it bombed. It was so, like, it wasn't our fault as much as like, there was no expectation set. And we get to lunch and the woman at Microsoft is like having a panic attack. Like, oh my God, like they hate it. And it was very clear what had happened. The Microsoft team did not communicate that this was happening. And, you know, plus you get a bunch of Brits who are already like pretty skeptical and, you know, America, you know, who's this American to come in and tell us? But we fixed it. We got the voice of the customer more for the next one in Barcelona and then the other ones, and they all went well. But, you know, that lesson and other lessons is you got to make people a part of the change process. And if people feel like they're a part of the change process, your ability to change faster happens, or, you know, is easier. And so that's my big learning is that, you know, and also you got to loop in the frontline managers. You know, we came in, we did an almost 3-year project with LinkedIn, and, you know, they tried to implement a methodology before and they just didn't get the frontline manager buy-in. And because guess what? Whenever you implement something, guess who's going to be there to reinforce it? It's the frontline managers. And so I think, you know, those are our two big things, that the frontline managers are the key to any change for a sales org. And you got to make sure you form teams of input teams that are made of the people that are going to be most affected. And if you do that, your likelihood for success goes up quite a bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of times I've even made the mistake, you know, I've spoken on HRASs, like the World Economic Conference in Asia, and I spoke in Japan and Australia. You know, I found myself having to give myself a checkup from the neck up, because if you don't read the room and you don't make it their idea.
Oh, yeah. Especially some of like Japan in particular. I remember the first time we did a training with a big company, Japanese team virtually. And it was rough. And again, we just didn't do a good enough job, like what you were getting into there, of like adapting. But that's it, man. 9 times out of 10, if you prep solves everything. It goes back to the solution to scale is the non-sexy stuff. You know, it's like prep. You're like, well, yeah, prep. I've done 10,000 sales calls. It's like, yeah, and go back and look at the ones that went really well and the ones that didn't. Usually prep was an important part of that. So what are you going to do about it?
It's really enrollment. Like, I taught a lot of leadership camps to my own organization, and we built an ultimate leadership challenge.
Yep.
The difference between, you know, the greatest leaders in the world for me is their ability to enroll others, not be autocratic, but they're having that ability. And in sales, it's priceless to be Socratic and enroll others in the process to where it's their idea. And now they're selling themselves.
Well, that's the heart of it. And bringing in your team. Like, I guess it's story time here. I got a note. I was 28. I was the second youngest enterprise sales rep at this company. And 28, 29 out of like 70 reps. I was the youngest enterprise. I had Intel. And the North American CEO sends an email to my boss and is like, I just heard the CEO of Intel speak. Tell Jake to book me a meeting with him. Like, I'm 29, 28, 29, living in San Francisco at the time. And I'm like, all right, let's go. And so, you know, I call the office of the CEO, email him. I'm on top of it. And sure enough, I get a meeting and he kicks us down to the global head of talent for Intel. Do you think I took that meeting? I showed up in some like oversized suit. I didn't know what the hell was going on. Like, I also got a meeting with the CEO of Kempton Hotels. Like, I didn't show up for that meeting. Like, team selling is also very real. You know, like, I would leverage the shit out of my executive team and get meetings I had no business getting, because again, there wasn't an ego involved. You know, like my job was to get the meeting. It didn't really matter, you know, how I got it with some of these companies. So
there's a great quote out there. Every master was once a disaster, right? I mean, if I look back on my career.
There you go. Oh, I like that. All right, I'm going to steal that.
You got it, man. Every master was once a disaster. I got myself 20 years ago showing up in cream colored suits and stuff. And I'm like, what was I thinking? I don't know. You know, definitely, you know, definitely have evolved for the better of mankind.
Oh, yeah.
You're dropping bombs and nuggets, golden nuggets for companies to understand.
Exactly.
Seriously, how to scale, and especially not just within your organization, but helping others do it. And that's what B2B sales are all about. And now with ChatGPT and, you know, Cedar Bard and all of these different AI tools and resources, they truly are. Like, I'm putting AI in the sales machine. There's so many redundant tasks that it can do so that my people can build better relationships and build better connection and enroll others into our value proposition. So where do you see it taking us, and how do you use it currently within your organization and for your clients?
Well, look, I mean, it is the most important shift in my, you know, 20 plus career, you know, year in sales. It is the biggest, most important shift in my career. And all of you listening right now need to understand this is not another sales technology. This is a completely new way to problem solve that we didn't learn ever. And, you know, we're used to kind of how Google problem solved, or, you know, what that might look like. And I'll tell you, you know, I'll give you some input. And what we'll do is, in the show notes, we'll drop some links that people can go check out, you know, in terms of some things that, you know, we put out a lot of content around this because it's that important. My co-host for AI Unleashed is Kevin Dorsey. We're actually having dinner here in about 30, 45 minutes or so. And he and I both, you know, kind of got together last spring, summer, and just, you know, started to think through the use cases where, wow, if it can do this and it can do that. And I'll just, you know, we could do a whole other show just on ChatGPT, but its ability to process large information. Hey, I'm trying to book a meeting with, you know, Conga in this division. Here's a link to that division, the product, what they sell. I sell this product, insert link to my product. Here's a link to Conga's press release page. Here's a link to their blog. Based on what they're talking about and what we do, what are three key value props based on what they're talking about in industry trends for a VP of operations that I can highlight that we can solve for? Boop. It would take me an hour to think through, to read, to think through, and waste my time on article. Like, it can do it in like real time. And so, you know, you've got a deal coming up. Hey, I've got a meeting. It's with the CFO. Here's their challenges. Here's what they said. IT is typically a blocker. What are the top three things I can put in my proposal that will help me to eliminate them as a blocker? Like, its ability to be that thought partner that's going to help you think 18 steps ahead is just unparalleled. And like I said, I'll drop some notes in there. And you know, I'll make sure my team gets the links for the show notes where people can go and learn a little bit more about these use cases. I just dropped a big playlist on YouTube called AI Unleashed, where you can go binge watch to your heart's desire, you know, all the ChatGPT, and you can insert Bard or any of the other ones, doesn't really matter, as a part of that. Long answer to a short question.
No, it's a great answer, and it doesn't have to be a long answer. I call it the co-pilot.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And people need to embrace it as their co-pilot, because at the end of the day, AI can have your back, and AI can be an extremely efficient and inexpensive resource. Ladies and gentlemen, the three-step process of the Jake greatness is, number one, you got to be customer-obsessed. Customer obsessed and prepared before you even attempt to have a meeting. Number two, the value proposition. Understand not only your value proposition, but what is their value proposition and what can they actually get out of the interaction with you and your company. And number three, a repeatable process. And when you can implement that, implement is the key from the great Jake, is when you can start to scale.
I love that. That's good. I haven't like synthesized it like that, but like, yeah, that plays. I'm good with that. I'm good with that as like the go-to.
Where can they find you? How do they work with Scaled Consulting?
Well, check out the book, right? Everyone come check out the book. Just you can pre-order it now on Amazon, Innovative Seller. It's really going to provide a modern framework for anyone looking to scale revenue. But you can pre-order now. We've got some Innovative Seller community you'll get free access to. So please go sign up for the book. And you can just go to my website, jakedunlap.com and /innovative seller for that. Like I said, we'll put the link in the show notes for you. And then check me out, you know, come to LinkedIn, you know, go to LinkedIn, you know, DM me on LinkedIn, go to Scaled, our website. You can just go click book a meeting or do a free assessment. And, you know, look, we love helping people. We love talking to business owners, sales leaders, you know, directors, ops leaders on, you know, various sales challenges they're having. So don't hesitate, reach out, happy to help you to hopefully, you know, get unclogged and, you know, help you to kind of reach the next level of revenue you're hoping to achieve.
Right on, ladies and gentlemen, Jake Dunlap.
That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for joining me today. And if you got value from this episode, do me a favor, like, subscribe, and refer a friend. And if you want even more value, go to thesalesmachine.com, click on resources, and there's tons of resources there to increase profits and drive performance in your business. Right on, right on, come on.